Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll was previously Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete, and if you're having any problems breaking through with any level of sports, if you give her a call, she can help you through it. She's been there, she's worked it, and she's been able to get through it. If you have any problems in life, please, please seek help. If you're in the Florida area, give her a call at area code 813-689-2466. You can visit her at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, guys, it was another fascinating week.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's good to be here. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Well, doing what?
We had had a nice surprise this week. I got a call on Tuesday morning that the vivacious and always powerful Mr. Frank Philippone was in town. So I had a chance to sit down with he and his wife and his lovely children. And
oh, wow.
We went over to see you. Uh-huh. Yep. Had a great meal with them and had some time to get to meet everybody and took them over to meet Dan Birmingham and at the gym. And it was a fun time. They were down at Disney World, and then they went over to Busch Gardens, and then we had lunch right afterwards. So
that sounds like a wonderful time. That is great. I'm glad you
it
got
was.
A chance to hang out with Mr. Philippone.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess Dan was pushing, of course, Mr. This afternoon I had the pleasure of coaching against one Jeff Lacey. Also,
Jeff Lacey.
Yeah, his young son plays football for the South Tampa Titans, and we had had the ability to meet on the field as well as at the gym before. But and Mr. Caden Carroll just was out of space today. We won the division championship, so Caden is back resting with his trophy. somebody asked him, Caden, is that your first trophy? He says, oh, get real.
Wow.
I never expected
that old Carol
like that. Yeah.
An attitude, I see.
But yeah. And, Jeff looks just as spiffy as he ever was. He looks like he's in tremendous shape and ready to go any time. But and Dan was saying he might think about making a comeback this year. I'll have to follow up with that. I didn't have time to follow up with that the other day, but I think Jeff's a little old. Well, maybe not. If we got Bernard Hopkins at 51 going to enter the ring again in December.
Well, you know, I mean, Jeff's days are behind him, but
yeah.
That said, everyone has a right to make a living. And,
sure.
You know, I think in boxing there are levels to this, and if you can find the appropriate level for you to compete at and you can earn income,
yeah.
Then why not do it?
Right.
Yeah, Paulie Maralazzi found his niche doing it as of now. Roy Jones even. So who's going to deny Jeff Lacey of that opportunity?
That's right. You know, I was talking to another former member of the cast, Eddie Chambers, yesterday. And he was telling me that, let's see, who was it? I'm having a brain fart here. Tony Thompson has been fighting overseas again and making a lot of money out of it. I hadn't seen anything. Had you seen anything like that?
No, I did not know that, but obviously for a guy like Tony who developed a reputation as a road warrior and developed a reputation in the European and Eastern European market, it would always behoove him to travel from a financial standpoint. He's always going to make money, more money overseas, and at this point he's still is a viable heavyweight trial horse. The last time we seen him in the ring, the last time I saw him in the ring, he was getting blasted out by Luis Ortiz, but at this point, Luis Ortiz is one of the flavors of the month. He's got a fight coming up on Boxing After Dark. And, you know, a lot of people consider him a top five heavyweight. So Tony is proven still to be a viable commodity in the division, and obviously for him, more money if he travels abroad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lee, what's your thoughts on Bernard getting back in the ring at 51 years of age?
Well, Ty and I were fortunate enough to stand next to Bernard,
right.
And he's in tremendous shape. When I say tremendous, he looked like he wanted to get in the ring. He has that energy about him too. And I had to I made the comment to where him and Gabe Rosado, I said that both of you guys are in tremendous shape not to be directly lined for a fight. and the Bernard in this energetic way, but he was telling us that it's a mind state. It's a state of mind. It doesn't matter the age. It just matters the state of mind. And he has proven to live that. So, I mean, and to be honest, Bernard has looked good in the ring until he saw Kovalev. And I just think Kovalev is that guy. You know, sometimes you just can't beat that guy no matter who you are, especially if you're older. I would have given Bernard a better shot when he was younger to beat Kovalev, but that's besides the point. Bernard still could, I mean, he looks like he still could do it. He has the mindset that he still could do it. So,
From Zito and I's experience, when you talk to Bernard Hopkins and the subject of age and health comes up, he becomes a motivational speaker. I mean, he literally was giving Zito and I motivational speeches on how to be healthy and that we can do it too. He looks great. And by health, I mean, not just physically, not just, you know, does he have a trim waist and everything, but his skin looks good. I mean, he's healthy inside and out. And you can see it. As far as him coming back, Bernard Hopkins, when he left at a very high level. Even though he left on a, you know, pretty comprehensive loss to Kovalev, he left to the guy who was widely regarded as the best in the division. He took a challenge and he came up short. However, with that said, we know he can operate, you know, at a pretty high level. He was doing it at 49. Who to question whether he can do it at 51, specifically since he hasn't taken any damage in those last 2 years. My biggest issue would be the time off. Had he been fighting more consistently, then I think he could still take on anyone at the world and make a credible performance. With that said, I know Bernard is looking for a farewell fight. So I don't even know what level of competition he's looking at. But again, a guy like that, once he gets back in the gym and gets sharp, his mind alone will be able to dissect most of the competition in front of him. So if he chooses a farewell fight, I wish him kudos. He's had a great career, and he's one of the only all-time greats still active in a sport.
Yeah. I had talked to Chris earlier in the week about that, and the first thing he started laughing, of course, and then he said basically the same thing, that Bernard is a gym rat. He's going to be working out every day, the same quality of workout. He's never let up, never let his foot off the gas, and he felt that, you know, depending on who the opponent is, that he would be successful again. So, but he's taking on a guy I think is almost 20 years younger than him. So it should be that could
all
be a
that's
big,
going to matter
big...
is the quality of the guy. I haven't read who he's fighting, but all that's going to matter is the quality of the guy. For Bernard, unless he literally, his body just really fails him, you know, I would like him probably against most of the, you know, in the bottom top 10, I like him, you know, I would favor him against, you know, mostly anyone in the bottom top 10 of this division.
You know, another guy that's been missing from the scene for a while is, of course, Robert Hellenius, and that had pretty much to do with his legal wranglings with Sauterland. But it seems that they've come to some kind of an agreement now, and they've decided to cease legal remedies against each other, and he's signed to do a bout with them again. What do you think about that, Ty?
Well, you know what? He had gone through the contract issues with Sauterland and to put him on a shelf for a while. Then he came back, won a fight, and I forgot who he just got knocked out. He got stopped at like 7. I forgot who he lost to. But it was kind of, I mean, it was decent competition, but it was kind of a shocker, though, because he was, you know, undefeated, except for that sore fight, which most people thought he lost, but he got the W. So he was undefeated. And then he was recently stopped. So all his momentum really came crashing to a halt with the contract stipulation, but again, then he lost. He's getting a little up in age. I don't know what he has to offer the sport at this point. I mean, he's obviously still a viable commodity, you know, which obviously is the term I'm using today because that's what we're talking about. Fighters who are not necessarily at this stage in their career is going to be hunting down titles but viable commodities. But what we have to look at with the heavyweight division, too, is with Tyson Fury relinquishing the other two belts, possibly Joseph Parker fighting for one, we have four belts out there again, as opposed to one guy holding three and, you know, Deontay Wilder holding one. We have four belts out there. So it makes the division wide open. A lot of guys are looking for competitors. Obviously, right now, it looks like the Tyson Anthony Joshua Vladimir Klitschko fight is not going to come off. There have been rumors that he may fight Lucas Brown, speaking of Anthony Joshua. So the division's wide open, and guys are going to be looking for contenders. They're going to be different, obviously, vacant fights or fights for the title vacancies. So, you know, a lot of eliminators are going to be going on. So with that being said, a lot of the heavyweights want to get back in action because things are percolating. They want to be looked at as one of those guys for those slots against one of those major fighters.
Well, you know, it's funny that you brought that up because, Triple G, Jacobs fight is off for December. But I understand that Brown has decided he was going to try and take that HBO spot December 10th at Madison Square Garden. Had you seen anything on that?
I didn't see that, but I think most rational minds weren't expecting the Jacobs Golovkin fight to come off December 10th. Obviously, Team Jacobs started talking a little differently after Golovkin's fight with Kell Brook. However, if anyone remembers before Golovkin, to some a little exposed in the Kell Brook fight, before that, Jacobs said he wasn't looking to fight Gennady Golovkin until probably the fall of 2017. So it wasn't until after Kell Brook that, it seemed like they were ready to start negotiating. But I think, any rational mind knew those negotiations wouldn't have the fight ready by December 10th. The thing that's really come out of that is that Golovkin's not going to fight at all. It'll be the first time in several years that he hasn't fought three times this year. He was scheduled to still have that December 10th date. Initially, it looked like he was going to take that date, whether it be Jacobs or someone else, but now he's not going to take that date. So that date is up for grabs. Who HBO gives it to, I don't know, but it seems to me that if they're going to look to make a fight on a date where Gennady Golovkin was expected to fight, they're going to look to make a fight that's going to bring in at least, if not comparable numbers, close to comparable numbers. And I don't know if Brown does that.
Yeah, I just went back while we were talking here and checked on the Hopkins fight. He's going to fight Joseph Smith Jr., on December 17th. Yeah. That should be a good fight.
You know what? It's funny. I thought he might fight Joseph Smith because I did read something about Joseph Smith saying he wants to knock Nora Hopkins out. Smith was considered a club fighter up until he knocked out Andres Fonseca. He caught Fonseca with a beautiful right hand, discombobulated him, and he finished him off, I think it was the first or second round. At the same time, Joe Smith is raw. He obviously has pretty good power, but Fonseca waded in. Fonseca, the way he attacked was in an overconfident, arrogant manner. He had his hands dropped in the floor, and he was standing straight up. He was wide open for the shot. Bernard Hopkins is not going to give him that shot. Typically, Joe Smith is the kind of fighter Bernard Hopkins can very easily disarm. And, again, unless his body all of a sudden fails him, I would expect him to do so. I think Joe Smith is a good fight for Bernard Hopkins to take, not having fought for a year. Again, he just, as long as he's sharp, he should win going away.
Yeah. Joe Smith's feet is not really up to Bernard's level. I think that's where it's going to be. What does scare me is Joe Smith has power, and that determines a lot. He has power, and even when Fonseca throwing the way he was throwing, without little regard for his defense, Joe Smith showed good power. He showed good power and time.
You know what, Cito? He showed he wasn't afraid to punch when Fonseca was punching, too.
Good time, and that takes a bit of time, and you're right. And the thing is, that's timing and power, that's kind of what Kovalev, is known for. That and his footwork. I just think that Smith has too. He has pretty good timing and very good power. I just think his feet are not going to get him there to Bernard. If Bernard, his feet has slowed up and Smith can get there, that's the only thing. That's when it can get dangerous. Only it may be in the later rounds if Bernard has to use his feet too much and maybe he's getting a little tired, Smith may start catching up to him with power. That could be a problem. But all in all, I see him frustrating Smith. Smith is in a almost he's too plodding, and plodding fighters don't do well against Bernard. Kelly Hopkins, Tavoris Cloud, even Antonio Tarver. Those kind of guys, you know, they don't do well against Benoit. He'll steer them all day long.
And the only time I've really seen him get caught with that type of shot was in the Pascal fights when he stood and exchanged.
Yeah.
Outside of that, Benoit just in, you know, just his style and his ring generalship, he's not open for that type of shot. He slides off to the side way too much, and he holds his, like, front arrow is completely squared up, just letting his hands go. Benoit Hopkins fighting tall too. Benoit Hopkins just doesn't give you those types of openings. He keeps a much smaller package, much tighter defense, and he typically doesn't exchange unless he feels he has an offensive advantage to press, and like Farfara did. So that's where I think Smith can be dangerous. But, you know, to just really concur with what Zito said, I don't think not only his feet but his experience, and I just don't think at this point he's good enough. He's young and strong enough, and that could always, you know, win the day. But no matter what happens, he's still really not a good enough fighter on paper to beat Bernard Hopkins, period.
I also understand that Bob Arum is trying to put a package together with Dean Lundgren to put Joseph Parker and Andy Ruiz in the ring together sometime early 2017.
That's it. It was Andy Ruiz. That's who they were speaking of for fighting for one of the vacant titles, Parker and Ruiz. And I want to say maybe it might have even been ordered by the sanctioning body. So, but there's a good chance that Parker will be fighting Ruiz for a vacant title. So, and that's why it behooves a guy like Lucas Brown to get back in the ring. You know, it behooves a guy like Tony Thompson to get back in the ring. It behooves Eddie Chambers to get back in the ring, maybe at heavyweight, just because all of a sudden, with these four fractured entities again, more title opportunities for these guys, more big fight, more money.
Sure. Z, your thoughts?
Absolutely. When you're talking about the heavyweight division as of now, as of this moment, post Tyson Fury, you have to say, it's – you still have top guys out there. You still have Klitschko out there. You still have Ortiz out there. I mean, so it's wide open, but to a certain extent, it might not be as wide open. Because you have your levels to the heavyweight division right now. As open as it is, there are some guys that, you know, that I don't think that you're going to conquer. You have a top tier. So it's going to end up being a fight amongst them.
And you know what? I completely concur. What's great is you have a top tier, but they're a very vulnerable top tier.
Yes.
On top of that, right outside the top tier, you have a lot of parity. Guys who on any given night are capable of beating the other guy. And it's like that with the top tier. We would always talk about the Klitschkos holding the division hostage because they were so much better than everyone else. Say what you want about the quality of the heavyweight division, but it equates to the Klitschkos were better than everyone else. And so the heavyweight division kind of stagnated, so to speak. Right now, we have more parity. Obviously, Vladimir Klitschko, even if he still is a dominating force in the division, you know, and the loss of Tyson Fury was an anomaly, he's come back to earth more. He's 40 years old. He's not going to be that dominant factor for the next 5 years like he was, right? So all of a sudden we have much more parity. We have this Deontay Wilder who's fighting injury and who seems vulnerable in just his boxing skill. We have Anthony Joshua who seems to be the total package, but he's vulnerable in just the fact that he's still green as grass. Right, so we have a lot of parity, and even though we have that top tier, and I would favor Joshua or Wilder or Klitschko or a healthy, mentally healthy Fury to beat most of these guys on any given night. On any given night, you could put in the Mir Mansour in with any of these guys, and he could catch them and put them out. They're that vulnerable, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes the division somewhat exciting. The only reason why I never want to see the belts be split into fours, I always want to see the undisputed champion. Why I don't have a problem with it now is, number one, the linear reign has been interrupted when Tyson Fury, he was the man that beat the man that beat the man. So that linear reign is interrupted when Tyson Fury vacated the belt. But the reason why I don't mind the split in the titles now is because there is so much parity. There's more of an opportunity for fights to get made that wouldn't have got made before. So I think that, you know, for me, it's an exciting time for the heavyweight division just because we'll see a lot of guys of equal ability fighting each other.
Yeah, and another thing is you have a lot of young guys coming up now, and pretty soon, I mean, the way it looks, they're going to be hitting the top tier, so even causing more power.
You know, Andy Ruiz and Joshua Parker are two guys coming up in their 20s. You know what I mean? These are two guys who, like, this is a step up for Andy Ruiz. Joshua Parker's had a step up. Nonetheless, these are two still unproven commodities. Who knows how good either one of these guys could be? One of these guys could be the dominating force of the division, and that's what makes it so great is we don't know because so many of the top guys are still young and green. And we can't forget Dylan White, who just won the British title. You know what I mean? So, I mean, he's still, again, he's proven to not be quite that top tier, but on any given night, you know, who knows if he's not.
He's still viable.
Exactly.
You know, there's also something out there on the line that's about Klitschko and Brown. Since Klitschko, Anthony Joshua's people couldn't get together on a fight purse or a date, Eddie Hearn, I guess, has stepped in and said that he was told that Brown will be fighting Klitschko December 10th in Germany. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, me personally, I don't. It's experience. Brown, I don't think he has the experience, to be honest. But new blood, I mean, always causes new friction. So
Lucas Brown is a big, strong,
tough
guy. That's what he is. He's a big, strong, tough guy. He's the kind of guy who you're going to have to put him out. You know what I mean? He's going to really have to be out of his senses to stop. When he was fighting Chagaev, he got caught with some shots. I want to say he got put down, but, I mean, he was losing the fight, and he came roaring back to stop him. You know, he's just one of those guys. He's a savage monster. What he's not is technically refined.
Mm-hmm.
What he's not is a style that's kryptonite to Klitschko. Klitschko's not going to have to chase him like Tyson Fury. Klitschko's not going to have to worry about the mobility, the long range, the jab. He's not going to have to do that. Lucas Brown is going to get in the ring and try to, you know, basically walk over Klitschko. So he has a style that if Klitschko is not as shot as some people think, because I think, you know, ultimately he's still Vladimir Klitschko. He just got caught up in the wrong style matchup. Again, I think the age has brought him down to earth. If he can't beat Lucas Brown, just based on him and who he is and how he fights and Lucas Brown and who he is and how he fights, if he's not able to beat Lucas Brown, then he really has fallen. Lucas Brown is the kind of fighter who, you know, a couple years we would have said is tailor-made for Vladimir Klitschko. He's going to be at the end of his jab trying to get in, and he's going to be walking into the right hand all night. And his best chance is to try to catch Vladimir with something big, and Vladimir's always been too clever for that. So, again, I think the reason why he lost to Tyson was because Tyson employed a style that made Vladimir Klitschko lose his identity. I don't think necessarily because Vladimir slipped that far, and the Lucas Brown fight will confirm that one way or the other.
I mean, Vladimir Klitschko has seen Lucas Brown before. Lucas hasn't seen Vladimir.
With this, Sam?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay. I thought we lost sound there.
Hey, you know what? You know, Vladimir, you look at a pull-up. Vladimir, he's always done well against big guys because a lot of the bigger guys were slower plotting guys coming at him. It was Fury who employed a Muhammad Ali strategy that totally confused Klitschko and made Klitschko have to come forward and be the aggressor. And that's what Klitschko can't do. That's why he couldn't let his hands go. He couldn't rip to the body when he had to. So, like, I look at that fight and it was just like, you know, Tyson Fury fought the perfect fight to make Klitschko have to do something different. Lucas Brown is not going to make Klitschko do anything different. Klitschko can fight Lucas Brown in his comfort zone. So, again, that's why I say if he doesn't beat Lucas Brown, to me it's more you know, a case of Dr. Steelhammer having slipped.
Yeah, he would truly have to lose something to I mean, well, really, I mean, lucky punch, you know, anything could happen in the fight. But I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, it depends. If he got caught in the first round or on a lucky punch, that ought to be different. If he lost during the course of the fight, then that'll tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, I just happened to see something come across the line that, going back to the Hopkins-Smith fight, it will be televised on HBO on December 17th.
Hey.
Yeah. So, another fight at the Lea Corus. It's going to be at the Lea Corus Center.
Is it going to be the Bernard Farewell fight?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's fighting at Philly, too. And you know what?
Yeah.
It's funny. Farewell fight in Philly, and he's going out against a guy who's ranked in the top 10 at 51 years of age.
A contender.
Enough
yeah.
said. Enough said.
Yeah.
A guy who's just coming off his biggest victory and is at an all-time confidence high. Enough said. Enough said.
Of course, we have another wonderful exhibition by Mr. One Adrian Broner. He just can't seem to stay out of trouble. I mean, Mayweather had taken him into his house to try and help him get straightened out, but he turns out going out to a strip club and starts choking out a waitress.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is, go ahead, see that, please.
Oh no! I was gonna say Broner's a guy that he's a guy who you would see talking, and you'll see the brashness and all of that. But then you'll hear other interviews and he talks with sense. So he's a guy who kind of knows better. I can't compare him to Floyd exactly. Some things I can, some things I can't. His level of professionalism.
Oops.
I think it is more than anything that needs to be worked on. He wants to be known as for a boxer for his skills. Then I think that's what he kind of needs to concentrate on. I mean, but that, you know, everyone needs to live their own life. So,
you know, the last time I had read about Broner before this incident, there were talks, rumors that he might be fighting Ricky Burns for his title.
Yeah.
And that's what I prefer to
read
about Broner.
We're joined by the golf professional, boxing historian. I was going to say hysterical.
I am hysterical.
The hysterical historian. That's the hysterical historian.
I'm the hysterical historian.
Yeah,
you know?
I love it.
How's it going, Dr. Chris?
Well, you know what? We had a nice, we had beautiful 80 degree weather, you know, and then all of a sudden it got cold. And,
yeah, feels like fall now.
Yeah, I worked outside the other day. I cut a tree down and cut it all up, and I got rid of my chest cold, about 90% of it. So I feel good today, man. I'm ready to
good
go.
Deal.
So
all right. Good.
What's going on, guys? What are we talking about tonight?
Well,
we were
talking
about
America.
Adrian Broner and his current legal troubles, his latest, I should say, legal troubles.
Who?
Yeah. Broner, Adrian Broner.
Oh, well, Broner, yeah, he has a gun charge on him, and did he get another one?
Assault.
Yeah, choking a waitress. Assault and battery on a waitress.
Oh, that's wonderful. He's done.
Yeah.
He's done.
Yeah.
You know, he's crazy. He's
funny, crazy,
Vito, anyway.
It's funny, Vito, when you said that
he's going to jail.
Oh, yeah. But with Vito, when you said that, I wouldn't compare Adrian to Floyd Mayweather. I don't compare Adrian Broner to Floyd Mayweather at all. You know, Adrian Broner reminds me of. He reminds me of Adam Pac-Man Jones a few years ago.
Who
he reminds me of. He reminds me of Pac-Man Jones, a guy who was wasting his talent in strip clubs and in fights on the streets as opposed to on a field. As Pac-Man has gotten a little older and matured, we see less incidences. And maybe that's just what needs to happen with Adrian Broner. But for me, I really have nothing to say about the kid until he's got a fight lined up. You know, right now he's just a knucklehead, and I don't want to waste energy on that. Yeah.
He's not worth talking about. He's such an idiot. He wanted to emulate Mayweather, and for a while he looked like he was going in the right direction until he met Mexican kid or the Argentinian.
Madonna. Marcos Madonna.
Yeah. And he got the hell beat out of him. But he still had a couple good fights after that. It's just that, you know, you just can't constantly screw up. I mean, that wake the hell up. Just like this heavyweight. What happened to the heavyweight champion was a disgrace. For him to get in all that trouble. You know?
Yeah.
It's a crime. You know, these guys have a bright future in front of them. Just can't.
Well, it's often that the things that get them there are the things that take them down.
You know what I think what needs to also be looked at, too, specifically in light of Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury definitely has mental health issues. And, and it's funny how, you know, people would joke about it beforehand and be like, oh, this guy's crazy. He has mental health issues, you know, when he was just doing his little publicity stunts. But it's come to light that, you know what, he really has mental health issues. Who's to say that Adrian Broner doesn't have mental health issues as well? You know, that's something that is not talked about a lot with boxers. But if you take a guy who already has some issues – and then you on top of that, he's just pounded in the cranium constantly. It's going to lead to some poor decision making. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at too as well.
Yeah, you kind of overlook a lot of a guy's shortcomings, mental shortcomings, and they show up later on when he becomes successful. It's sad, but it's true. You know, and that's what happened to Broner. He had a lot of mental problems in the beginning, and they became obvious later on in his life, you know. But,
Mike,
you know, what are you going to do? Send him to a psychiatrist? He ain't going to listen to him, you know. It's very hard to change a guy's mental direction. Very difficult, you know. I know Butch, when Butch Lewis had when he was training, the guy that beat out Spinks, he wore Butch out. Mentally wore Butch the hell out. He had to have a 24-hour-a-day bodyguard with him. Watch where he went, what he did. You know, make sure he didn't get in and drive a car because he had no way of knowing whether he was going one way or the wrong way. I mean, he was a constant problem. And you know, after the Ali fight, he fought a few times, I guess, after that. But he had there was no cure for him. And believe it or not, he was a very likable guy. I liked the guy. I met him several times, and I liked him. He trained at the Upper Darby Gym. But he had mental issues, mental problems. There's no way around it. And then, they dropped him after the second fight when he lost the rematch. They dropped him. But this has happened down through the years. There's been more fighters have squandered talent because of mental problems than any other one thing, I think. You know? I mean, I saw it in the 50s. I saw it in the 40s, 50s, 60s. I mean, it seems like it goes with the territory, you know? It's such a tough sport. And then they make it all at once. They usually come from the lowest economic chain, and then they make it all at once, then nobody can handle them. It's sad, but it happens. It'll happen again, too. There'll be a lot more Adrian Broners out there, you know. So.
Hey, Todd, let me ask you a question. You know, they just had the WBO just had their big convention. Some of the talk coming out of the convention was that and I guess it came from Frank Warren himself, the promoter, was talking about Billy Joe Sanders possibly hooking up with either Triple G or Canelo Alvarez in early 17. Do you think that's a possibility, or what's your thoughts on that?
Canelo Alvarez, possibility. Triple G, not a possibility. I don't think Billy Joe Saunders wants that fight, specifically because Oscar De La Hoya, Aaron Gomez, and Golden Boy Promotions has bandied about the idea that once Canelo does move up full-fledged to middleweight, that Billy Joe Saunders will be the guy he would target, obviously, because the only other belt out there is the one by Billy Joe Saunders. As we know, the Jacobs-Golovkin fight, that's about to go to purse bid because the WBA is mandating that. So either they're going to fight through purse bid if the negotiations don't come through, which it doesn't seem like they're going to come through. They're going to fight through purse bid, or Jacobs is going to relinquish that belt. And if he does relinquish that belt, you know, Golovkin's already the super champion, so I just think that belt would be void because he's just a regular champion. So obviously Billy Joe Saunders would be the guy Canelo would target, which in my mind makes Billy Joe Saunders say, look, I don't want the Golovkin fight now anyway. Plus, why would I risk the opportunity by me holding this belt? I'm a commodity in case Canelo is ready to move up. So that's not a fight I see happening at all.
Z?
And as far as boxing wise, that's exactly what Ty said. It's exactly what, I mean, the viable thing that Billy Joe Saunders should do. Just because I don't think he has a shot of beating Golovkin at all. And with Canelo moving up, that's where a shot is. That's where a shot that to claim the fame a bit.
A more winnable fight.
Exactly, the more winnable fight. I just don't think he, you know, for not as much money, he would get destroyed by Golovkin. there's nothing that I could see that would work in his favor against Golovkin. Against Canelo moving up to 160, that's different. That's different.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, you know what? I think as far as Canelo goes, he's a 154-pound champion. He's making a great living. He's a big draw. What in the hell? Why the hell does the public want him to move up a division and fight a bigger, stronger, tougher guy? It's like why doesn't the 147-pound champion fight the middleweight champion? You know, a bigger guy. Hey, he's doing fine at the welterweight. If he can make the weight, let him stay there. You know what I'm saying? I don't know Saunders. I don't know where he is in his career. I don't know him real well, but you know, he wants a payday like everybody else. And probably he would take Saunders before he'd take Golovkin. If I was De La Hoya, who the hell would you match him with? I'd match him with the easier opponent. You know what I mean?
Sure. Absolutely.
I don't want to have my meal ticket destroyed. You know. So, you know, I mean, you know, I'm anxious to see him fight Golovkin. But, you know, I don't know if he's going to grow into a full-blown middleweight or not at his height. He's not really a tall guy.
Exactly.
I don't think he's going to grow into a full-blown middleweight. And you know, why the hell do we want to get him beat so early in his career? I'd say, hey, boys, I'm staying at 154. You know, when Golovkin retires, I'll move up. You know, because after he hit that one guy and broke his cheekbone, I mean, who the hell wants to fight him? You know, so Saunders, I don't know a hell of a lot about him. I you know, but I'll tell you one thing. I watched the Castillo fight the other night when he fought the tall featherweight.
Diego,
you know. Oh my God, what a fight!
Yeah. Wow.
You know, if you don't watch it maybe once every 3 years, you forget. What a phenomenal fight that was.
The first
was
fight?
The one where he was knocking...
Corrales down.
Yeah, the guy knocked him down twice.
Oh, yeah.
And he got up
and
stopped him. That may have been one of the greatest fights of all times. I don't know how it could get any better. That was just a great fight.
Yeah, widely considered the greatest fight since a lot of people consider it, you know, the greatest fight in the last 20 years, you know, at least since Ward Gatti said. I think it was better.
I mean,
so,
to get anywhere near it, you got to go to Arturo Gatti. You know, the only fights that were like that were Arturo Gatti and the Irishman, you know.
Back and forth.
Yeah, back and forth, up, down, who got knocked down, who got up and got... I mean, that's one of them old-fashioned wars that you don't see anymore, but what a hell of a fight. Oh. And I think the ref stopped it a little early. I think if he'd have let it continue, I think it would have even been greater. I don't know who the hell would have won in the long run, because Corrales was really got knocked down twice good.
That second knockdown, I thought it was done.
I thought he was done too, didn't you?
He grabbed his face.
He threw his mouthpiece out. Remember, he grabbed his face and threw the mouthpiece out.
Yeah.
He wanted to get the hell out of there. What am I doing here? Let me out. Where's the door? You know, he didn't know where the hell he was. You know, and you know he was hit hard when he started throwing a mouthpiece away, grabbing it. You know, it was a foreign body.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But you know, I just what a fight! I turned it on. I wound up staying up an extra hour to watch it because it came on at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I watched it too. What a great fight. Jesus. But we got a few potential fights like that coming on. We're getting closer and closer to Andre Ward and
Kovalev.
Kovalev, that's coming up soon. I still have no idea what the hell's going to happen in that fight. I have no idea. Other than I know Kovalev's going to charge, throw a lot of right hands at him, and I think Ward will either dip under him, encounter inside, or he'll get out of the way. I don't know if he's going to stay there with him for a while. What do you guys think? You think he'll stand in there with Kovalev for a while, or will he just move early?
I think he's going to stand totally in or totally out. Ward, he's a better inside fighter. Kovalev's not an inside fighter. Kovalev, he's also not a plotting fighter either. So he's going to change where inside is. That's where Ward's going to have
a fighter, but he's not an easy fighter to get inside against either. You know what I mean? Because
exactly.
He has good timing and knows how to step back, Axe Bernard.
Exactly. I think with Andre, that's bad. He's going to make it ugly. He's going to make it ugly and as comfortable as he can for Kovalev.
I think one of the keys to the fight is Kovalev's jab. Kovalev, I don't know if Andre Ward, definitely at light heavyweight, he hasn't fought anybody with this kind of jab. Kovalev has a very good, stiff, long jab. And he knows how to bring the right hand behind it to the head of the body. Like Zito said, you know, I think Ward, he's going to have to muck it up. He's going to have to, you know, make it ugly.
He's going to have to survive. They're on the early rounds. He's going to have to survive. Get into the late rounds.
I think Ward has the best jab in the game. I really do, as far as how he uses it. Maybe the best left hand in the game. I really do. You know, the best weak hand in the game because, you know, a lot of people are southpaw. So let me say, I think he has the best weak hand, lead hand in the game.
Lead hand.
And I think what it really comes down to is Kovalev being able to change up his game plan. He's dealing, to me, with a fighter not as crafty or as defensively inclined as Bernard Hopkins. I think Bernard Hopkins, even at his age, is a better defensive fighter than most, if not, you know, all the guys out there except Floyd, you know, possibly Oregon-Dia. I think he's a tremendous defensive fighter, and I don't think Ward will ever be that level of a defensive fighter. But I think Ward is a more versatile offensive fighter. And I think what it really comes down to is Kovalev's going to shoot that jab out, and it could give Ward some problems. But if Ward gets the timing down and is able to start to counter or come in behind it and is able to do that effectively, then Kovalev's going to have a long night. So I just think the jabs are going to be really important in this fight. Also, what you got to understand, too, is don't be surprised to see Ward every now and then turn southpaw to move to his right. You know what I mean? To move out of way of that right hand, even though the straight right is what a southpaw is vulnerable to. But if Ward turns southpaw and is moving off to his right, he's moving completely away from Kovalev's right hand. So, I think this fight is going to be high-speed chess for real. You know, we talk about that, but that's what this is going to be. Kovalev, for all his crushing power, is not a punter. You know, he's not a slugger. He's a boxer puncher. You know, he sets his shots up, and he just delivers them with tremendous impact and force. So I think we're, you know, we're going to see a high-speed chess match.
I think the chief of Kovalev is going to be timing. If he could keep his timing sort of erratic, then Ward's going to have problems. Ward's going to have problems getting to where his positioning. If Ward starts to time Kovalev, which Ward is, most of these guys have good timing. That's what makes it so interesting. Kovalev has good timing to get his power off when you kind of think that you're not going to get it. When you think you might be away or you might be toured, that's Ward's going to have trouble going through that territory. His problem is going to be just going through any territory. But don't be surprised if Ward makes it an inside fight.
A
smart inside fight where he's going to skin the skin a lot with Kovalev, a lot.
Yeah, it's. You know what Kovalev's going to do. He's going to come in, he throws the power jab where he stops his left foot and jams it into the floor and lets his whole body go forward. And all that power is at the end of that jab. Then he throws the right hand behind it. And he doesn't have much of a left hook behind the right hand. So if Ward dips under the right hand, he can work inside. He can do some work inside and do some hitting inside.
And because of his ability to switch, he could always, again, in the midst of things, turn southpaw, slide off to the right, and not have to worry about a big left hook necessarily coming either.
Yeah, he doesn't. Kovalev doesn't throw the left hook very well, and he doesn't throw it often. He certainly doesn't throw it behind the right. He loads up so hard with the right hand that he can't throw the hook behind it.
Because his feet are out of position. His feet are out of position.
Right.
That's why
he's got all his weight on his front, and then, you know, when you throw a right hand and then you throw a hook behind, you got to be balanced. You can't have all your weight going forward. You got to be solid and throw the hook.
He comes up high on his left hook. He comes up high on his toes with his left hook.
His biggest weakness has always been his feet because he always kind of stumbles forward. Because, like you said, he puts his weight so heavy on his front foot. And Ward is a guy who will take optimal advantage of that. I think for Kovalev, what he has to do, I think it comes down to him being able to change up his rhythm and change up his punch variation. Kovalev throws very nice, crisp, straight punches. If Ward is vulnerable, Ward has proven to be vulnerable to an uppercut. You know, that's where he got dropped by Darnell Boone. He doesn't get caught with it a lot because he's so adept at moving his head. But That's what Kovalev could catch Ward with, dipping in. If Kovalev could do a nice crisp uppercut, Kovalev manages distance well. But I think for him to really beat Ward, he's going to not only have to manage that distance well, but he's going to have to really add to his punch variation because Ward is not going to be where he's going to want him to be all the time. And he's going to have to throw Ward in the 1-2 against Ward as well. He's going to have to throw some combinations because Ward will make him miss the 1-2. And Kovalev will get frustrated if he's missing and you're tagging him back. Even if you're not winning, even if he's dominating the rounds, but when he can't get action, he starts to get frustrated. And if he gets frustrated in this fight, things can unravel really quickly, and he could end up looking pretty bad throughout the fight.
You know what? It's a boxer's fight. You take any boxer, anybody got in the ring, or everybody fought amateur pro. They all have different opinions on this fight. I have never had anybody, they always say, well, it could happen this way, it could happen that way. It's very hard to predict. That's what's going to make it so interesting, is the fact that you don't know what the hell's going to happen. You know? It's going to be very interesting. So, I'm looking, and it's in November, too, not that far off.
Yeah, a few weeks away.
Yeah, I think it's the 16th or 17th, something like that. I can't wait, to be honest with you. I mean, I can't wait to see it. But, hey, you know what? I watched the rerun of the Santa Cruz fighting the little guy. Was it Porter?
Peter Frampton.
Frampton. That was one hell of a fight, wasn't it?
That was
Frampton
good fight.
Stood in there and counter with him right, but I think when you really saw the fights after, and you saw the reruns, you saw that Frampton missed a lot of those right hands.
Yep.
And I think that the judges, it looked like they landed, but then I'd see the slow rerun. He didn't hit that. He didn't land. I don't think he landed as many punches as he got credit for. But it was a great fight, though. And you know what amazed me? Santa Cruz, he was very good after the fight. He accepted the decision. He's a very decent person. He didn't scream and holler, "I got robbed," you know? And he said, "I'll go to Belfast and fight," you know? So it'd be interesting if he goes over there and takes the rematch. Yeah. Well, your buddy sprung a surprise on us last week, saying that Garcia, he made the match with Garcia, Danny Garcia. That's going to be one hell of a fight. And now I'm trying to figure out how is Garcia going to fight Keith? Which way will he fight him? You know?
Danny, he do everything, but he generally fights at one pace, at one gear, at one pace. He's not a exciting, throw a lot of punches fighter. He's not a dance around fighter. He's kind of a one pace, plodding a lot fighter.
Well, yeah, you know what? I watched the rerun of the Matisse fight. Matisse pressed him the whole fight. Then when Matisse's eye closed, everything changed after that. When that eye went shut, it was another different fight. The last three rounds were totally different. But Danny Garcia was, he got hit by some good solid shots. He could take a punch. And that's going to, I don't think that fight's going to end in a knockout. I think it's going to go the full distance. Unless Keith starts snooping up on him early and get him in the body early. But he takes a good punch, that kid. You know,
Danny's
he's not
good
as hard a
job.
Hitter. He's not anywhere near as hard a hitter as Keith, but
Danny has pretty good power. Danny has pretty good power. Danny is good at adjusting. The problem, I think, in this fight could be that Danny might not have time to adjust. Keith he uses his feet and he's quick. And if Keith sees a few openings, which Danny's prone to give you, then Danny has been nailed by shots by quick-handed guys. I just don't think he's going to keep taking Keith's quick-handedness. I think Keith is going to sit down on one or two and put Danny down. We've seen Keith can hit hard. Keith can hit hard, and I don't think Danny has fought a person that hits this hard. That's this big at this weight, hits this hard. I think that's going to be a problem. But Danny's good at adjusting. And if Danny adjusts, I think Keith's going to have a big problem.
You know what? Here's what I think, too. I think it's funny. I think Danny's good at adjusting, and his adjustments are very subtle, or even the tougher adjustments. Danny, in spite of one thing about the kid, there are some decisions I thought that should have gone his way. A couple decisions I thought should have gone his way, going against him. But he always is in the fight. You know what I mean? He's always in the fight, and he always gives himself a chance to win, even if he looks like he's fighting a guy who should beat him. The one thing about Danny, though, he can really only fight effectively at one range, and that's kind of that mid-range. You know what I mean? If you're on your toes and moving, he has trouble with you. If you're pushing him back, he has trouble with you. But if he engages you in the center of the ring, you guys are just kind of doing that. Then he always finds a way to go ahead and get the better of you. I think what Keith has to be careful for is, like Vito said, the subtle adjustments. And with Danny, such subtle adjustments that could cause Keith problems are just adjustments in timing and just adjustments in essentially reading Keith's patterns. Danny's real good at punching when you punch. I don't know if he wants to do that when Keith is punching. But what he's smart at is parrying and coming back to something. So Keith is going to have to be cognizant when he lets his offense go. I don't see Danny having the speed or the mentality to pressure Keith because he's not like Sean Porter. He's not going to try to walk through with Keith is firing. Not to mention Keith just proved he can handle pressure. So I think, like Zito said, what Keith has to really be, kind of cognizant of and kind of wary of, for lack of a better term, is Danny's experience. Danny's taking that experience and uses that to make subtle adjustments to pull out a victory when it looks like he could lose a fight. So that's a very interesting fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Danny can catch you. Danny's, Danny's good at catching you. Danny's good at, I mean, he's real good at catching you. You'll be doing something, and in the middle of you doing stuff, he'll catch you.
And Danny will catch you with a nice killer shot, a nice big shot.
Yeah.
But you know what? One thing Keith can do, Keith can come forward, and he can also, you know, fight off his toes. And Lamont Peterson gave Danny Garcia hit by doing that. From my estimation, Garcia only won 2 or 3 rounds. But, you know, they gave Garcia those first rounds where Peterson was just outboxing him on his toes. Keith can do that with power. So, you know, I think it really is going to come down to how Danny adjusts and then how Keith responds to that adjustment.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We've got some good ones coming up. Damn good ones. Do you think Deontay Wilder is going to schedule anybody soon?
Yeah, he has some healing to do. He has to heal up.
Is he scheduled to fight anybody soon?
He said he wants to come back early 2017, but, I mean, in his last fight, he broke a hand, tore a bicep. So it's just going to be a matter of when he can get healthy. But he's a guy.
How long ago did he break his hand?
That was, when was that when he fought Areola?
Areola?
Like 2-3 months ago.
Yeah, well, he got 8 weeks, 8 weeks for the hand.
And he also tore his bicep, too.
Bicep.
Yeah.
That can be a real problem, especially if they didn't operate on it. Did he tear one of the heads of the bicep muscle?
That I don't know.
If he tore a bicep, he tore it's the two heads that insert into the bottom of the arm. If you tear one, they almost have to be operated on to tie them down. That I tore my bicep, my left bicep, and it changed the whole shape of my bicep. And when I do exercise now, it hurts like hell.
Ooh,
I haven't thrown a left hook. I work out down on the speed bag and that, but I haven't thrown a left hook in 6 months since I tore that bicep. I'm afraid to put that pressure on it, you know, that bang, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you know, that, because that can be nasty. That's a nasty operation to pin it to the bone. So Deontay might be out a little longer. He might come back and find out he's not going to be swinging that damn left hook too good. Because he's a
right
hand puncher. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean.
His right.
It was his right hand bicep that he tore it up.
It was
the
right bicep?
Oh, he did tear the right hand up?
Yeah, it was all on the right side, the right hand and the right bicep.
Oh,
wow.
That's why he was throwing the left hook so much.
On that
remember
left
he was
hook, yeah.
His left. Mm. Remember we said, man, his left looks better than ever. Well, that's why.
Mm.
Hurt his right hand. Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Well, guys,
what the hell?
We're just about
coming up
on our hour here. Chris, I had a chance. I was telling the guys earlier I had a chance to sit down and have lunch with Frankie Philippone and his family this week. They were down visiting the area, and we had a chance to get together. What a nice kid and what a nice family. But
he
has
a nice
fight coming up. Yeah, he has a fight coming up November 11th. So we'll have to wait and see.
Will it be on television?
He's trying to do that now. He's going to give us a call next week and let us know how things are going, and we'll get him back on.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Is he going to be in? Is he going to do any sparring with Andre Ward? Is he going to be in Florida at the same time or what?
No, he left. They were just down here for vacation.
Oh, they left. Okay, he's back.
But he did have a chance.
He's a police.
He did have a chance to stand and talk to Dan Birmingham, and Dan and he were talking about possibly bringing him down to do some sparring with Keith as a left-hander. They felt that he would be a great shot for Keith. So we'll
yeah, he's
we'll
a little
bear.
That won't hurt. Yeah, he got about 15 pounds on Keith.
Yeah.
Be interesting.
But,
that was to this.
Well, guys, we are now officially up against our clock. Chris, I want to thank you for coming on again. It's always a pleasure to have you.
It's getting close to showtime pretty soon.
That's
right. we're getting close. You think the Eagles are going to win tomorrow?
Oh, that's going to be a tough one.
What?
I think both quarterbacks are going to get tried for sure. that I think your former quarterback is going to be the successor.
Well, you know what? I mean, if the Eagles can't stop the run, of course, one thing Minnesota don't have is a good run game.
Right.
You know? Right now they don't have a good run game. And that might work in the Eagles' favor. But I do, I imagine Minnesota is probably at least a six-point favorite.
At this point, it's 7.5.
7.5? Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. At home, yeah, they're going to be, especially the way the Eagles looked against the run. Oh, my God.
It looked horrible.
You know? Oh, it was awful. And yet they hung in there. They only lost by 7 points.
That's right. That's right.
So it might be a better game.
Yeah. Ty, what's your thought on your Cowboys?
You're
Pittsburgh,
fan,
right?
Yeah, but I typically don't talk football on weeks that Steelers lost. So I don't know what
but
you guys
didn't you lose
about.
Your – what's the story with your quarterback? Is he gone or not?
This is a
he won't
deal,
be. He got hurt last
year. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
He's not going to play. Roethlisberger's not going to play. As tough as he is and been able to fight off injury, he's not playing. I can guarantee that.
Yeah.
He'll shock me if he shows up.
Do you have any choice next for tomorrow's game, Z?
As far as which game? The Eagles?
Whoever your team is that you're
a Chiefs fan.
Supporting.
He's a Kansas City Chiefs fan.
Yeah,
so am I. I love the coach. Definitely love the coach.
Andy, I don't even know who we play. As far as the Eagles are concerned, the Eagles have to worry about Minnesota's defense.
That's right. They also have to worry about a certain quarterback's arm. He can throw 3 and 4 touchdowns every game. But we won't say that. I mean, that just goes to show what the front office was thinking when they got rid of him.
All
right, guys, well. Chris, again,
all
I
right.
want to thank you
see
for
you guys
on.
Next week. All
okay,
right.
Have a great
Take
day.
Take care, guys. Bye now. Bye.
Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, it's been a great show as usual. I want to thank you guys for coming on. Butch, Cedum, Dr. Chris. Look forward to talking to everyone next week. I'm their co-pilot.
See?
It's been a wonderful show. I want to thank you guys. I want to thank Dr. Chris. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. If anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch.
Before we go, let's have a medical update on Mr. Mel. How's he doing?
He's doing fine. He's doing fine. He's back at home. He's getting around, trying to get around a little bit better, and everything's just going slowly better.
Good. And I also heard the good news that your mom is going to retire soon.
She's looking to do so.
Department of Health.
Well, she's planning her end game.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent. Well, give them both our love when you see them. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week. In grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, if you just let them know that you know they're there, a smile, a handshake, or the best thing you could ever say to anyone in uniform is, be safe, my brother or my sister. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Bainger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogo, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department,
Sergeant Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department. Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent. Harris County Deputy Sheriff Darrell Goforth. Prince William County Deputy Ashley Gidden, Eustis, Texas Police Officer David Hoffer. Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff. Lieutenant Mike Zinke, Wilmington Fire Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless and have a great week.
Shemalek ma'ilama Shemahezahilma Sonashene voratfet Hakuigegen ma'ilma
Good night, guys. Bye. Good night, Bob. Love you and miss you.